56. Some winds up to 20 miles per hour. Sunday, partly sunny and 63. Right now, wind southwest at 12. We have sunshine with 71 degrees Kenosha, 69 Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath, 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. This Monday evening on PBS stations across the country, including Channel 10 in Milwaukee, the PBS series American Experience will be airing a fascinating documentary called Mr. Polaroid, examining the life and career of Edwin Land, creator of the Polaroid camera, one of the great technological breakthroughs of the mid-20th century. One of the contributors to that film is attorney Ron Fierston, and I'm going to be sharing with you today two interviews I have recorded with Mr. Fierston, one from 10 years ago when his book The Triumph of Genius was first published, and then one from just a few days ago in which we cover other matters related to the story of Edwin Land, which we did not get to in that first interview. Again, we are previewing the film Mr. Polaroid that airs this Monday evening. If there is anything that people in modern America, throughout the world for that matter, tend to take entirely for granted, it is the notion of instant photography, of pointing your camera, your iPhone at something, pressing a button, and voila, there is the image forever captured. Once upon a time, and those of us who are old enough vividly remember this, you had a camera with film in it, and when that film was exhausted, you wound it up, you opened up your camera, you tucked it into an envelope, and you mailed it off, and you waited for those pictures to be developed and to be returned in the mail. And that was a whole different world. It feels like a different planet we're describing. And one of the geniuses who helped change the whole notion of photography is a man by the name of Edwin Land, and he helped develop the famous Polaroid camera and a brand new technology which utterly transformed people's understanding of photography and their expectations. But with the development of that spectacular new Polaroid camera came some real trouble in the form of various competitors encroaching on those important discoveries. And hence the stuff of a fascinating new book called A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War, in which we hear about the struggle for Edwin Land and the Polaroid Company to fend off competition from Polaroid, from Kodak, with technology which they believed encroached upon their patents. And the author of this book is someone who was involved in that groundbreaking case, Ron Fierstein. He was a lawyer with the firm of Fish and Neve, representing Polaroid in that battle with Eastman Kodak. And Ron Fierstein, as a matter of fact, worked very closely with two of the most important witnesses on behalf of Polaroid, Dr. Edwin Land himself, as well as Howard Rogers. And so he has a very intimate understanding of this entire dispute and its significance. Since then, he has gone on to a career of representing a number of people in the recording and theater industries, and but has taken time out of that busy, interesting life to write this fascinating book, again called A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. And Ronald Fierstein, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
Just fine. I am so happy to talk with you. A couple of times in the last year or so, for no particular reason, I have thought about the Polaroid camera. I so vividly remember our well-to-do relatives from Milwaukee coming to visit us in our little town in northeast Iowa, and my Uncle Carl having with him one of these spectacular Polaroid cameras, and at least the one he had, this would have been in the mid-60s, was, you know, now in my mind's eye, a huge contraption. But this notion of the picture, you pull it off, you peel this thing away, and you wait, and just within seconds, you actually see this image. It was like an astonishing miracle.
There's a great quote from Arthur Clarke, the famous science fiction writer, that says, he said back when, that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I think that's exactly what you're touching on, Greg. This was a radical departure from the way photography had been done for more than 100 years, where you could hold the photograph in your hand just moments after pressing the shutter.
It was just extraordinary. And again, in some ways you feel like you were present when you saw your first automobile or something like that, when all you'd known before that was horse and buggy or stagecoaches or something.
Exactly.
I don't know, but it felt, in a sense, almost as revolutionary.
Well, you know, an interesting aspect, in your introduction, you talked about, you know, how people can take pictures with digital cameras these days or their phones, for example. And, of course, that's true. But the big difference between that kind of instant photography, if you will, and the kind that Polaroid did was that with Polaroid, you actually held a print in your hand, and with the digital camera, of course, you have to show the photograph on the screen and otherwise. But it's not quite the same thing.
No, not exact. And I think it's also one of those instances in which now, of course, a Polaroid camera, it might as well be a butter churn in terms of its utter irrelevancy to our modern life. And yet, at some point in time, this was a spectacular innovation. And I think one of the interesting things about your book is that you help us understand the science behind this innovation beyond the really interesting sort of legal battles which ensued. Talk for a moment, first of all, about Edwin Land himself. I wish we had longer to talk because he is an extraordinarily fascinating figure who apparently from very early in his life was tremendously fascinated with light. Tell us more about that.
Well, he, as a young camper in a summer camp, a counselor demonstrated to the kids the phenomenon of polarization. Polarization, very simply, is the ability of some materials to be able to take the glare out of bright light. The only material that people knew about in those days, which were the 20s, were big pieces of crystal, big pieces of rock that could take the glare out of bright light. And Land, as a young man, and some of his friends, they immediately thought of all kinds of applications for a more practical material, everything from sunglasses to camera filters to taking the glare out of automobile headlights. And so he committed himself to that. It became an obsession of his. He started experiments in high school. He went off to Harvard, but dropped out in his first year to pursue experiments to try and come up with a practical polarizer. And then at the age of 19 years old, he solved the problem. He found a way to create a very thin piece of plastic that had microscopic crystals embedded in it that could take the glare out of bright light. And from that, he was able to start his company, which became Polaroid, and your sunglasses of today, your LED screens, your polarizing filters on your cameras, so many, many applications use that technology that Edwin Land developed at the age of 19 back in the 20s.
Hmm. The prologue of your book talks about a moment in 1943. Describe to our listeners the event that you describe in your prologue.
What happened was Land had built a $200 million company based upon this polarizer technology. A lot of the growth came from World War II, where they produced all kinds of devices for the military. But at the end of the war, as the war was winding down, he became concerned about the future of his company because he was never able to sell the polarizer to Detroit as a great idea. And so he thought, well, this is going to be a limited market for this invention. I need something else to apply my energies to and the energies of my company. And he was on vacation with his daughter. They were taking a walk in New Mexico, enjoying the light, snapping away, taking photographs. And when they were done and they were walking to the drugstore where he had to drop off the film to get it developed, his daughter started tugging on his pants and going, "Daddy, Daddy, I don't want to wait. I want to see the photographs now." And, you know, a lot of fathers would just dismiss a young kid complaining about that, but not Edwin Land. Edwin Land, it really sparked something in his mind, and he immediately set out to come up with a photography system, a revolutionary one, that would provide a photograph within moments after snapping the shutter.
Hmm. Tell us more about what was required to achieve this technological breakthrough, and just how radical a reshaping of the whole process was this? I mean, was he taking technology that already existed and just sort of shaping it and altering its process, or was this completely different from the kind of photography that had been done before?
Well, you know, Land used to say that all scientists and all inventors' work rests on the shoulders of those who went before them. And so I think that that is absolutely true, and it was true in this case. This technology is called diffusion transfer, and I don't want to get too technical for your audience, but basically you have a material in the negative which then transfers to a positive to create a picture based upon how that negative has been exposed. And it's called diffusion transfer in black and white. It's a silver colloid material that transfers in color. It's a dye. In fact, the same three color dyes that form the color pictures in your computer printer, cyan, yellow, and magenta. And Land started, there had been back into the 19th century some work in diffusion transfer, very simple diffusion transfer processes where a negative would transfer an image onto a piece of glass, or very rudimentary things. And Land started with that technology. But to take that technology to the level where you would have a sharp photograph within a minute was quite a lot of work and quite an undertaking, and he and his team were able to accomplish that in 4 years. So 1947, he was able to demonstrate for the first time the first one-step photographic system. It took sepia photographs, and in 1948, Polaroid put out the first commercial system, which also took sepia photographs, and later they put out black and white film, and in 1963, they were able to introduce color film. But all of those were peel-apart systems. You know, when Land first conceived of this, he thought of a photograph that would just come out of the camera and develop in your hand. But that wasn't quite possible, and it took a lot of steps to get to that. So the early ones, as you mentioned before, had to be timed and then peeled apart, and then you'd have to cover the print with some kind of chemical to stabilize it. And if you wanted it to lay flat, you'd have to mount it on a piece of cardboard. It wasn't until 1972 that Polaroid put out a system that really reflected Land's original dream, which was to have a photograph come out of the camera and just develop in your hands with no further action taken by the photographer. And that was called the SX-70, and that was truly revolutionary.
Right, that's even a more amazing development. Well, of course, this is the kind of spectacular breakthrough that had a company like Kodak, of course, really spooked. So tell us what Kodak ended up developing, which Polaroid regarded, it would seem quite rightly, as an encroachment on their own patents.
There are really two themes in my book. One is the story of Edwin Land, who's just the most amazing inventor, third on the list of U.S. inventors behind Thomas Edison, that no one's ever heard of, and I just think his story needs to be told. But the other main story in my book is the relationship between Polaroid and Kodak over 60 years, and how it went from mentor-protege to arch-enemies. It really is a story of almost operatic dimension. Polaroid would not have succeeded without Kodak's help. Kodak was instrumental instrumental at every step of the way in the early days. Kodak was the first customer for Land's polarizing material back in 1934. They bought the equivalent of $100,000 of that thin plastic that they turned into camera filters. When Land decided to start those experiments we talked about in photography, who did he turn to for the materials? His friends at Kodak. They gave him paper and chemicals and all kinds of things to work with, even though they had no idea what he was doing. And later, when he came up with the final product, he realized that he couldn't manufacture, his company couldn't manufacture the negative, so he engaged Kodak to manufacture the negatives for Polaroid film. And in fact, Kodak manufactured the negatives for every Polaroid film from the very beginning in the 40s well into the 1960s. And by the mid-1960s, Polaroid was Kodak's second largest corporate customer, second only to the cigarette manufacturers for whom Kodak made those small white plastic tubes they turned into cigarette filters. So these two companies had a long and mutually beneficial relationship and were very close. Everything changed, though, in 1968 when Land showed the prototype of what was to become SX-70 to his friends at Kodak. For the first time, Kodak looked at that and said, wow, this might be the thing that challenges our domination of amateur photography. Because up to that point, when instant photography was peel apart, Kodak really looked at it as a curiosity, as a niche, you know, and they were happy to be a supplier of the negative. But when they saw this picture that emerged from the camera and didn't require any other work and just developed in front of your eyes, they got nervous. And they said to Land at that point, listen, we'll help you with this new film like we did with the others, but only if you let us manufacture some and sell it in our own yellow boxes. Polaroid couldn't accept that. They didn't think they could compete. And so at that point, the two companies went their separate ways. Polaroid went off to learn how to manufacture its own negative. Kodak went off to figure out how to compete with Polaroid in this field. And it wasn't until 1976, 4 years after Polaroid put out SX-70, that Kodak came out with its own system. Up until that point, no one at Polaroid, including Dr. Land, knew what Kodak was going to come out with. You have to realize Kodak was the most formidable photographic research company on the planet. And so they were fully capable of leapfrogging Polaroid's technology and coming up with something radically better. But in fact, when they came out in 1976 with their system, it really was not radically better. And in fact, it incorporated several aspects of Polaroid's technology. And from that came probably the most important patent technology lawsuit of the 20th century.
Hmm. And we only have a couple of minutes to talk about that process. But I wonder, for the average layman, if you could just give a sense of what the nuts and bolts of such disputes tend to be. I mean, when one is working through whether or not, in fact, a company like Kodak has encroached upon the patent of a company like Polaroid, what specifics are examined and in what way to arrive at a determination?
Well, it's pretty simple. You know, a patent covers an invention. And our patent system says that if you invent something and you disclose it to the world by publishing it in a patent, you can have a monopoly in that invention for a limited period of time, which at the time was 17 years. After the 17 years, it becomes available for everybody to use, but you have your limited 17-year monopoly in your invention. So when someone uses your invention without your permission, you sue them for it's called infringing your patent, because they're using your invention. So the first thing you have to prove is that they're indeed using your invention. So you can prove that by just comparing the product they put out with the invention disclosed in your patent, and you make that connection. The other main contention people who are accused of infringement make is that the patent is no good in the first place. Because even though the patent office may give you a patent, it's not fully determinative forever. And someone can challenge that patent and say, no, patent office was wrong. They shouldn't have granted a patent because the invention disclosed isn't really an invention. Because there is a quantitative level that you have to reach in order to be entitled to an invention. It has to be new. It has to be unobvious to others who are skilled in your art and so on. So Kodak was said, in some cases, we didn't use your invention, Polaroid. And in other cases, they said, well, Polaroid, the patent you're suing us on is invalid because it shouldn't have been issued in the first place, because the invention disclosed really doesn't rise to the level that warrants a patent.
Hmm. I noticed in your biography that you work directly with two of Polaroid's main witnesses, Dr. Edwin Land and Howard Rogers, during what's called the discovery phase of the litigation process. What was that like for you?
Well, that was a tremendous experience. In fact, I worked with them both through the trial. I wrote the outline for Dr. Land's and Howard Rogers' testimony at the trial, and worked with them through the entire process. And it was fascinating because they were both wonderful gentlemen, incredibly intelligent. Dr. Land was a bit imperious, and some people saw him as harsh and difficult. Many of his employees were scared to death of him. But really, if you got to know him and if he respected you, he was warm, and I will forever be grateful for the fact that he let me work with him and tolerated my efforts, if you will, to learn a technology that he knew about. He knew more about than anybody on the planet, and I was frantically trying to learn this technology and frame it for him in the context of the lawsuit issues. And I really appreciated the fact that he somehow found that, my help to be worthwhile and let me work with him. And at the end of the trial, he actually autographed one of his patents for me, and I have it framed and proudly hanging on my office wall.
Hmm. The book, again, is called A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War, published by Ankerweich, and the author, Ronald Feirstein. Ronald Feirstein, congratulations on a really, really fascinating book. I appreciate the care with which it is written, and I'm so glad we got to talk about it today. Thank you so much.
Greg, thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And now we have a follow-up conversation newly recorded with Ronald Feirstein, again, the author of A Triumph of Genius, and one of the experts who is heard from in this new American Experience documentary called Mr. Polaroid, telling the story of Edwin Land, which is airing this Monday night on PBS stations across the country, including Channel 10 in Milwaukee. Ron Feirstein, it's great to reconnect with you. Thank you for being my morning show guest once again.
It's my pleasure. So happy to be here.
I would love to hear a little bit about your involvement with this American Experience documentary film, which I found so fascinating, and I hope many people will seek it out and watch it. It's such a fascinating story. Tell us about, I assume, the makers of this film reaching out to you and inviting you to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was a great surprise, and I was delighted when last summer, I believe it was, they reached out to me and told me they were working on this documentary and that it was in part going to be based upon my book, and they asked if I'd be available to speak with them, which of course I was, and we taped several hours of interviews. And I just found them to be really well prepared and really interested in the subject matter. And just generally, it was a delight for me that there seems to be, very recently, a renewed interest in Edwin Land and in the Polaroid story. In my personal opinion, I think Edwin Land is one of the great American inventors and technology entrepreneurs that no one has ever heard of. And he deserves more attention.
Absolutely. And, of course, it is a really intriguing story in many respects, a story of success and triumph. But there are also some darker, sadder chapters to his story as well, which makes it all the more compelling. And so I am glad that his story is being told in this documentary film, as it is also told in your fascinating book. One of the things that I wonder if we could talk about that we did not touch on too much in our first interview is Edwin Land early on in his life, what he was like, and the whole matter of entering Harvard early and dropping out after a semester and so on. I mean, at that point in time, I suspect most people would not imagine that he was on the brink of achieving something quite extraordinary. Tell us about young Edwin Land and what you think is most interesting about that portion of his life.
I think he was a child prodigy when it comes to science from a very early age. He was known for taking apart various devices in his family's home, like their record player. And again, we're talking about the 1910s, 1920s. So these were, you know, early mechanical objects. But he loved to take them apart and then try to put them together again, not always successfully, which much to the chagrin of his parents. But he was always interested in exploring and technology. He also became fascinated with light and with optical devices at an early age. Obviously, these are the days before television. And so, as he put it, one of the big entertainment devices in those days was something called the Opticon, which was a device that allowed you to look at slides in stereo. They would have two pictures side by side. You put them in this device, you held it up to the light, and you can see a photo, a picture in three dimensions. Most libraries had those kinds of devices, and people would go to the library just to look at various sites and various scenes on this Opticon. And so he was always interested in science. And there was a pivotal event that occurred when he was a young man at summer camp. And he went for the counselor at the camp, and there was a bit of a science theme to this camp, demonstrated to the kids an Iceland spar, which was a big, huge, heavy piece of crystal. But the one characteristic of this crystal is that it could take the glare out of bright light. And the counselor demonstrated this to the kids. And a couple of days later, they all went on a little buggy ride, a horse and carriage, in the evening. And they almost had a serious accident when an early automobile came in the opposite direction with its bright light glaring. So it occurred to Land that maybe this spar, this material, could take the glare out of bright light. And that started a quest of his that went on for decades, really, and so became really what started his whole career.
One of the things that is highlighted in the film, Mr. Polaroid, is what Edwin Land experienced during the Second World War and the ways in which some of his experimentation or exploration of this thing called polarization ended up being useful to the war effort. Explain to our listeners what I'm talking about.
Well, very much so. Land went off, as I said, to try and find a way to use this crystal material to take the glare out of bright light. It took him quite a long time and many experiments to do it, and a lot of research. He was a student at Harvard, and when he graduated from high school, he actually started this quest in high school, went to Harvard, was bored with school, dropped out, asked his father for some money. His father agreed. He went off and ultimately was able to find a way to create a very thin sheet of plastic in which he could align microscopic crystals that would have the same effect as this big chunk of rock. It was a pursuit that had eluded the greatest minds in physics for hundreds of years, since the 16th century. But he came up with a solution when he was 19 years old. He graduated from dropped out of Harvard, and ultimately was able to commercialize this product in the very early stages of his career. The first products he sold were to Kodak, who used this material for camera filters to take the glare out, what we now know as polarizing filters. And then his second big sale was to the American Optical Company, which created sunglasses, the same kind of polarized sunglasses that people use today. was discovered by Edwin Land when he was 19 years old. When the war effort started, there was a fellow named Vannevar Bush who was from MIT, and he went to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and these are the days before America had joined the war, but there were many people who believed that our involvement was inevitable. And Vannevar Bush went to Roosevelt and said, look, let's not make the same mistake we made in World War I, where we didn't harness America's technological capability to win the war. Let's get ready now and find a way to use academia and industry to help the war effort. They did that. He recruited a bunch of scientists to aid the war effort, and Land was among them because they realized this polarizing material could be used in the war effort. Polaroid went on to make all kinds of products, everything from specialized goggles that tank commanders could use in the desert. It was a picture on the cover of Life magazine of George Patton wearing one of these Polaroid goggles. They used them for specialty goggles for pilots to land on aircraft carriers at night because the aircraft carriers didn't want to shine their lights because they were afraid of Japanese kamikaze pilots attacking. And so they only used very special ultraviolet lights. And Polaroid created goggles that would allow the pilots to be able to land. And this started Land's involvement with the government and science and technology that lasted for literally decades. Land started working with Roosevelt, but worked in secret for the most part for every American president through Gerald Ford.
What, of course, is so intriguing is that with the gigantic expansion of the Polaroid company during the Second World War, I mean, ramping up to be part of the war effort, Edwin Land found himself very soon confronted by a challenging question, namely, what next? What should the next chapter be? And he was not at all willing to have the Polaroid company sort of recede back into its first size. He needed to figure out what the next thing was going to be. Tell us more about this crucial moment in Edwin Land's life and career.
Well, you're exactly right. The war, you know, not with any planning, of course, but the war did provide a major boost to Polaroid because they were able to use this polarizing material to such great effect. But Land's main objective, going back to the story I told a few minutes ago, was to sell this material to Detroit for cars and automobiles to take the glare out of headlights. He was never successful at that. The automobile companies just didn't want to go to the expense of incorporating this product into their automobiles. They were selling them as fast as they could make them, and they just felt like they didn't need to, even though they acknowledged it could be of some help. So with the war ending, the market for polarizing material was not looking encouraging, and Land really had no idea of how to use the great organization he had built, full of brilliant scientists, engineers, and so on some kind of product that would keep the company going. And he was on vacation in November or December of 1943 with his family, and he went for a walk with his young daughter. And they were taking pictures with an old-fashioned Kodak camera. And at the end of the walk, Land said, well, let's go to the drugstore and hand the film in to get developed. But his daughter started jumping up and down. No, Daddy, I want to see the pictures now. I want to see the pictures now. And, you know, most fathers would just reject that as the silly musings of a little kid. But Land, it struck a chord, and he dedicated himself at that moment to creating what became instant photography, the system of a photographic system that would allow one to take the picture and see the finished product within minutes.
One of the things I really appreciate about the film is that I think it really helps us understand the nature of this breakthrough as being more than just a technology that would allow that would address the impatience of a little girl who wants to see the picture right away. I mean, and of course, all of us by nature tend to be impatient. But it wasn't just about sort of speeding up the process. It was also, and this seems to have been really important to Edwin Land, there was a way in which this changed the relationship between a person and the photographs that they were taking, that somehow before, with a more laborious process, there was a distance there. And something about this breakthrough brought people into a closer connection with the photographs that they were taking. I'd never stopped to really think about that, but that's really an important aspect of this that we should not forget.
Absolutely. Land really understood the intersection of technology and art. And what you're describing really is an artistic kind of impulse that people have, whether they think of it that way or not. You know, photography allows one to really focus on the things around them and to look at things in more detail than they might otherwise. And Land understood that and appreciated the fact how this technology could enhance that in people's everyday lives. But the instant gratification aspect of it was another important motivator for him, because he did recognize that people appreciated the instant gratification that his instant photography system could provide.
So one of the things that is important for us to understand about Edwin Land and his Polaroid company is the way in which it was a company unlike any other at the time. And we can look to certain companies nowadays, like Apple or Google and so on, and see some intriguing parallels. And someone in the film, and maybe it's you, actually goes so far as to say that the Polaroid company was, in a sense, the Apple of the 1950s and 60s. Explain how this was true. I mean, the way in which the culture of this company, the way it went about doing what it did, was so remarkable and in some respects ahead of its time.
Well, absolutely. In fact, it was. I think I did talk about that in the film, but it was actually the Boston Globe that made that claim back in 2008. It called Polaroid the Apple of its day, feisty, ubiquitous, pioneering. The Polaroid camera was like the Mac, in the sense that it had a sense of engineering superiority and cultural cachet. Going with that kind of product, Land also built a company that was, a model for some of the companies to come afterwards. I mean, it is a fact that Steve Jobs, who obviously was the founder or one of the founders of Apple, idolized Land. He met him several times during his lifetime, and Jobs, I think, described the visits as, going to the temple and seeing, the deity of the technological world. But it was, back in the 60s and 70s, you're talking, the cool things were the Ford Mustang and the Polaroid camera. You know, those were the cool products, the same way some of the Apple products of today fill that niche.
We're speaking with Ronald Feirstein about his participation in this documentary film called Mr. Polaroid, telling the remarkable story of Edwin Land. The film outlines his life, his professional career, and the stupendous breakthroughs that occurred with the Polaroid company over the years. The story of Edwin Land, of course, becomes quite complicated in the later years when its relationship with the Kodak company changes drastically and leads to a bitter court battle. Explain to our listeners just how close and cooperative the relationship between these two companies was And that, and then exactly what changed that relationship so dramatically and drastically?
When Polaroid developed its first camera system in the late 40s, they had the technology, but they didn't have the wherewithal to manufacture this this stuff. So they had to go out to companies to actually build the camera that they designed. But on the other hand, manufacturing film is a very complicated, very difficult system that requires all kinds of special facilities. And so Land by that time had met several Kodak executives, research executives, through his work for the government, and reached out to them for help during his research to get photographic materials without telling them what he was working on. Long story short, he comes up with his first workable system, and he went to Kodak and asked them to manufacture the film for Polaroid. That was a relationship that started in the 40s and lasted into the early 70s for decades. Polaroid film was manufactured in Rochester by Kodak. They had that special relationship. And by the late 60s, Polaroid was Kodak's second largest commercial customer. The largest one actually were the cigarette companies, for whom Kodak manufactured small plastic cylinders that were used to make cigarette filters. And that was their biggest commercial customer, but Polaroid's film was the second. This is a great relationship. It went through many iterations as Polaroid continued to develop its technology and got better and better in the black and white field, which was first, and then ultimately in the early 60s when they developed their first color film. It was a great relationship, and Polaroid was a great customer, and Kodak never felt that Polaroid was going to be a threat to its dominance of the commercial, the consumer photographic market, because Polaroid was a niche market. You know, it was more expensive, it didn't appeal to everyone, and it really didn't seem like it was ever going to be it would ever detract from Kodak's dominance of the amateur photography market. Well, all that changed in the 60s when Land, you have to understand, the early Polaroid products required some work by the photographer. You took the picture, you had to pull the unit out of the camera. That unit was really basically a sandwich of a positive and a negative. You had to time it, then you had to peel it apart, and then you had to coat the picture to prevent it from fading and so on and so forth, and then mount it on some cardboard so it wouldn't curl. It was a lot of work to be done by the photographer. Land's ultimate dream was to create a photograph that would come out of the camera and you wouldn't have to do anything except hold it and watch it develop in front of you. That took 40 years to develop, and finally in the 60s, Land had the prototype for what was going to become SX70 film, where the camera ejected the film unit, you held it in your hand, you watched it develop right there and had to do nothing else. Well, when Land went to Kodak and showed them the prototype for that, for the first time, Kodak believed, uh-oh, this might cut into our amateur consumer photographic market. And all of a sudden, Kodak started to become a little more difficult in terms of the conditions set for helping Polaroid with this, and ultimately wanted to be able to manufacture its own film for Polaroid cameras and sell it side by side with Polaroid. This was a line Polaroid could not cross. You're talking about David and Goliath here, you know, and Polaroid felt it could not compete with Kodak because Kodak had the relationship with the retail industry and so on and so forth. And so Polaroid could not agree to that. Kodak would not agree to make the Polaroid film for SX70 without that. And so ultimately they went their separate ways. Polaroid went off to learn how to make film for the first time by itself, and Kodak went off to try and create a product to compete with this thing that Polaroid was going to come out with.
What was the heart and soul of the court action in which Polaroid challenged Kodak. Were they, in a sense, charging Kodak with theft?
Well, what happened was, you know, all inventions are, well, not all inventions, but most inventions and all of Polaroid certainly were protected by patents. And patents give the inventor for a limited time, an exclusive monopoly on using that technology in return for disclosing it to the public in the form of a patent document. Well, Polaroid had its technology very well covered with patents. Kodak went off to learn how to try and come up with a system to compete with Polaroid that obviously would not infringe on Polaroid's patents. The Polaroid SX-70 came out in 1972. Great acclaim. People loved it. It became a real phenomenon. Kodak, in the meantime, is off trying to create its own thing. It took until 1976, 4 years later, to put out its rival system. Everyone at Polaroid was quite concerned about what Kodak would come out with because they were the preeminent photographic research company on the planet. And there was great fear at Polaroid that Kodak might just leapfrog it in terms of its technology and come out with something fantastic. Well, it turned out not quite to be the case. And when the Kodak product, the so-called EK6 camera and Kodak color film came out, it turned out to be what was described by some journalists as a knockoff. And more specifically, when it was analyzed technologically, it became apparent to Polaroid that some of its technology was used in the Kodak product. And so Polaroid, having really no choice, had to sue Kodak for patent infringement. And that became the most important patent infringement lawsuit in American history. It was brought in Boston Federal Court in 1976. And it was ultimately not resolved until the early 80s. But at the end of the day, Kodak was found liable for infringing several Polaroid patents, including inventions of Dr. Land himself, and was ordered to pay almost $1 billion in damages to Polaroid. And those were early 1980 dollars. So it'd be much more in today's dollars. And in fact, that was the largest patent award in history until very recently.
Hmm. It's quite a story. And of course, what is almost equally amazing is that Polaroid was not destined to survive all that much longer because it was a changing world and Polaroid was not quite changing with it. And of course, ultimately, Polaroid sees the departure of Edwin Land and files for bankruptcy and now is in some respects just a sort of a footnote in history, but a fascinating, important, illuminative footnote in history that is brought so vividly to life in this film, Mr. Polaroid, and also brought to light in your fascinating book, which we also encourage people to seek out, A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. Ronald Feirstein, thank you so much for taking time to join me once again on the morning show. It was great to reconnect, and I appreciated your contribution to this fascinating film airing Monday night on PBS. Thank you and best wishes.
My pleasure.
Monday on the morning show, out of the archives, Keith O'Brien, the author of a book called Charlie Hustle. It's a book about baseball legend Pete Rose. We're rerunning this because of Major League Baseball's decision to make Pete Rose now eligible for inclusion in its Hall of Fame. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. We remind you that you can hear the podcast version of the morning show 7 days a week. That is a different morning show 7 days a week. Be sure to look for the morning show with Greg Berg. Mostly sunny skies, windy conditions today, quite warm, and a 30% chance of late afternoon rain. Today's high 83 degrees. Our winds at times up to 40 miles per hour. Windy and mild tonight, a 40% chance of rain, a low of 53. Sunny tomorrow and a high of just 66 degrees. Sunday, sunny and a high of 63. Cooler still early next week. Daytime highs only in the mid to upper 50s. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elkhorn in Lake.